Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Kashkari, I want to direct my first question to you, and I want to follow up on the line of questioning that our chairman and our ranking member went into with regard to the $250 billion of liquidity that's been provided to the banks. Their focus there was to make sure that those dollars were not hoarded and that the actual result would be the lending that we would like to see happening. I understand that, and I appreciate your answers with regard to that part of the program. The question I have goes to the toxic asset purchase issue. It seems to me that the plan to utilize these resources that Congress has provided for the purchase of toxic assets has the opposite impact. In other words, it creates an incentive for investors to stay on the sidelines for a while and watch what the government's going to do, and then maybe step in at some later date and either buy or finance purchases from the government. And I just wonder what your thoughts are on that aspect of the proposal.
Senator, thank you for the question. The question you ask is fundamental to the design of the program. The program is intended not only to buy troubled assets, but in doing so, to provide price transparency to the market, because our view is that there is a lot of money on the sidelines who are interested in investing in our institutions and in these assets themselves. And our hope is that by the federal government taking the first step through a very open, transparent process, that'll encourage private capital to come in. That's the exact intention of the program. So we agree with the spirit that you raise.
But isn't the fact that the federal government is going to step in such a major way going to create just the opposite result, namely that the private capital will sit back, stay on the sidelines, and watch for a while to see what will develop?
I think it's a very good question, and I think that there's some merit to that point up until we get started. And that's why we're moving as fast as we can. But once we get started, and we're going to get started slowly, methodically, let the market see what we're doing, we expect them to understand it very quickly and then start to come in.
All right, thank you. And Chairman Baer, I also am concerned that the direction we're heading with this, particularly with the numbers of guarantees that we're now seeing put into place, has essentially driven us far down the road toward a situation in which financial institutions are basically becoming disconnected from the risk of lending. Could you address that?
I agree with you. These guarantees make me uncomfortable. We had a compressed time frame to make a decision. We evaluated the pros and cons, the risks and the benefits. But at the end of the day, especially given what was going on in Europe, we didn't really think we had an alternative. We needed to move ahead. I am aware of the additional moral hazard, obviously, with expanded guarantees. We have in place a heightened supervisory process on the use of these and very tight controls over weaker institutions using these if they use them at all. But I think we can compensate through the supervisory process for some of the additional moral hazard. The other key is to make sure they are temporary, and believe me, I'm determined that these will be temporary. And we are charging a premium, though I would hasten to add, this is not just something we're providing, we are charging a premium.
Your point on the temporary nature, I think, is very important. In fact, one of my questions was going to be, how do you take the guarantee away?
Well, we're out there now saying it's good. It's going away June 30th, and I understand there might be some pressure to continue it. I don't think anybody should assume it's going to be continued. It's not. My decision is to make every expectation that it will go away. There are things, if you needed to have some type of phase process as opposed to a cliff process, I think you can do that by reducing the cap, ratcheting up the premiums, so there are ways to ease out if we want to have a slower process. But I am resolved to end these expanded guarantees because of the additional moral hazard that they create for us.
Thank you. And Mr. Kashkari, back to you. With regard, again, to the toxic asset purchase, and I'm focusing now on the underlying mortgages, and the question I have is, how will the servicing of the loans be handled? Will it be handled by the current servicing managers, or are we going to create a new system or a new, I was going to say bureaucracy, of a new set of managers and recreate the system that we have now?
At this point, Senator, our intention is, where possible, to keep the servicing with the existing servicer, but send to them very specific instructions, a plan on how we want them to conduct the servicing consistent with our objectives.
All right, thank you. And another question I have is, I appreciate the fact that Treasury has submitted a request for ideas on how we can establish the insurance program that was involved in the legislation that we had. And as you know, the liquidity crisis is not limited to the residential mortgage arena. It's expanding into a number of other areas, and the one I'm thinking of right now is the commercial mortgage arena. Has Treasury considered using the insurance program to provide a guarantee, a government guarantee or an insurance for the safest part of, or for some part of the commercial mortgage market?
Senator, it's a very good point. We've heard a lot of the same perspectives that you raise, both from the banking regulators and from individual institutions. If you look out in the regional bank market in particular, they have a lot of mortgages, whole loans, commercial mortgages on their balance sheets. So we think that the insurance program may well be applicable there. And these are just the very ideas that we're soliciting right now. Our initial focus is on residential, but we're very aware of and focus as a second step on commercial.
All right, thank you very much. And one last question I wanted to ask is, you had talked a moment ago about credit default swaps and the fact that there are a number of those in which one of the swapping parties doesn't have an ownership interest in the underlying asset. That's been an issue that we've developed or that we've discussed in hearings in the Agriculture Committee on derivatives. And the question I have is there no purpose for those types of swaps? I understand that one of the arguments that is being made is that even though the swapping parties may not have an ownership interest, they may have a very strong financial interest in the outcome of or in the strength of the company that is engaged in the underlying transaction or some other type of reason for wanting to be sure that that transaction is insured.
Senator, I'll say, first of all, I'm not an expert in the credit default swap market, so let me just set expectations. But I think you're right. I think that there are many reasons why financial institutions or financial counterparties may want to hedge certain risks that they may or may not own directly the underlying asset. So I think that's right, and I think that we need to have the experts take a hard look at that.
All right. Thank you very much.